Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Two contemporary composers on two musical journeys. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, Missy Mazzoli joins us with a brand new opera, and later, Meredith Monk shares a new remix album of her own works. Plus, we have some important information about Monday's Greenspace show. But let's begin with an intrepid 19th century explorer, her Russian nihilist father, her Algerian soldier husband, the makings of a great story, and it's all true. Composer Missy Mazzoli has turned the tale into a work called Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt. A multimedia opera, it'll have its premiere at the Kitchen tomorrow night, but Missy's here with us today to tell us about her inspiration, an explorer whose life was short but full. Missy, welcome to Soundcheck.
Great to be here.
So, Isabel Eberhardt. You've been talking about her and this piece for a number of years now.
It's true.
Who was Isabel Eberhardt, and how did she kind of spawn this multimedia work?
Mm-hmm. Well, Isabel was a Swiss woman born in the late 19th century. And at a very, very young age, she moved by herself to North Africa, to Algeria. And, you know, as you mentioned, she led this life that really just sort of begs for an opera. I mean, she dressed as a man, as an Arab man. She roamed the desert alone on horseback. She was nearly assassinated. She was inducted into a Sufi sect that typically excluded women, but they accepted her as a man because she dressed as a man. And, you know, died at a very young age, died when she was 27 in a flash flood. I mean, a flash flood in the desert, it's like the irony of all ironies.
Right.
And so I picked up, and in this flood, you know, she, the whole time that she was in Africa, she was writing extensive, very detailed, very personal journals. And when this flood came in 1904 and sort of wiped out most of her town and killed her, her journals were sort of washed away in the flood, and her husband actually had to come and pull them out of the water and dry them off. And they were published recently, or probably about 15 years ago in English, and I found a copy in a Boston bookstore completely by random, by accident, and I was just enthralled from the moment I started reading it.
So this was a woman who literally made her own way in the world at a time when that really wasn't an option to most women.
Exactly.
And so dressing as a man, was it known that she was a woman dressed as a man, or did people genuinely think, well, that's a dude over there?
Well, my what I can gather from all the sources that I've looked at is that everyone knew that she was a woman. I think that she thought she was fooling everybody, but she has a very sort of beautiful feminine face, and it was pretty obvious that she was a woman. But I, you know, people really accepted her as a man.
So, according to Juliet Stevenson, who wrote a biography of her, she traveled with no money, living from day to day. I'm quoting here. She had no concept that chastity was of any value and was sexually voracious. She was into kiff smoking, and she lived in Morocco dressed as a man. Sounds like a real character. How much of that character do you sort of, you know, stay true to in the course of your opera?
Well, I mean, what really fascinates me about Isabel's story and about her writings is actually all the things that she doesn't say. I mean, her story is fascinating, and we do portray a lot of these very significant events in her life in the opera. You know, we show the moment when she was nearly assassinated. We show the sort of religious ecstasy when she is inducted into the Sufi sect. We show this kind of turbulent on-again, off-again relationship with the Algerian soldier. But what was fascinating to me from the moment I read them was that I was just imagining how she felt. You know, how does it feel to be a woman who has no role models, who is making this all up as she goes along,
yeah,
who is incredibly alone, who's in incredible physical danger, who's sick all the time from fever, and is just doing things that I think even by today's standards were incredibly brave. So this really set my mind free artistically, and that's actually where the opera comes from. It's not a precise documentary of her life, but it's really takes place inside of her head, and we explore in a more abstract way you know, how it felt, you know, when falling in love, and you know, all these things that she went through.
We're speaking with composer Missy Mazzoli. The opera is called Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt. And maybe we can talk a little bit about the title in a moment. But the character of Isabel is sung by Abigail Fisher.
Yes.
She's here with us as well. And the first of the excerpts you're going to do for us, first of all, it's just you. You're doing a piano reduction of the ensemble score for us today.
Yes.
So in concert, it's what, five or six people? It's the Now
yes.
Ensemble.
It's Now Ensemble, yes. Mm-hmm. That's sort of our pit orchestra is
right.
The fantastic New York-based group Now Ensemble.
And the song You Are the Dust, where in the story is this?
This takes place about three-quarters of the way through the opera. This is a song that Isabel is singing about her lover, again, who she
is
was...
Is this her husband or is
he,
this someone
at that time, he was her husband, yes,
okay.
Yes. Same man. She fell deeply in love with an Algerian soldier. They were married, but... I think that she always struggled to reconcile her independent nature with her intense love for this man. So this is sort of a song about that and about the pain of leaving him to roam the desert alone.
All right, let's hear it. This is from the opera, Song from the Uproar, based on the remarkable and remarkably short life of this Swiss woman, Isabel Eberhardt. Sung by Abigail Fisher, the mezzo-soprano, and the composer Missy Mazzoli at the piano, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
You Are the Dust. That is an excerpt from the opera Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt, by composer Missy Mazzoli, who you just heard at our piano, live performance in our studio with mezzo-soprano Abigail Fisher in the role of Isabel. The piece opens tomorrow night at the Kitchen, runs through March 3rd. All of the shows are already sold out, but there is a wait list. You can put your name on the wait list, and I understand people do get in that way. And we'll feature the Now Ensemble plus Abigail. There's a five-voice chorus. Where does the libretto come from?
So the libretto was written by Royce Vavrick, and I also wrote a portion of the libretto. It's really an extrapolation of her journals. Mm-hmm. So what Royce and I did was go through and with our director Gia Farakis and our filmmaker Stephen Taylor, decide on the events that we wanted to portray, find lines of text that Isabel actually wrote that reflected that, but then turned them into sort of more singable poetic text.
Mm-hmm. Was she, in addition to being an adventurer, this woman who dressed as a man in the deserts of northern Africa and, you know, died at the age of 27, was she an artist herself? I mean, was she of a literary bent? Is that why she kept the journals?
Exactly. I mean, she had aspirations her whole life to be a writer and, you know, worked as a journalist at times. And when she died, she left behind a book of short stories most of them are about life in Algeria and Morocco. And she also left behind an unfinished novel.
Mm.
So, and the journals themselves, even though I don't think that she meant for anyone else to ever read them, are incredibly poetic and beautiful.
So the opera is called Song from the Uproar, mm-hmm. The Lives and Deaths, plural, uh-huh. of Isabel Eberhardt. Care to explain that?
Sure. Well, you know, I wanted an abstract title, you know, and because it's an abstract piece, because mm-hmm. it's not Isabel Eberhardt, the opera.
Right,
that didn't
right.
seem right.
She is born, she grows up, she moves,
exactly,
she dies. Yeah.
You know, and the lives and deaths, I mean, what was so interesting to me about her life was that there were so many contradictions. I mean, she really valued her freedom and was an incredibly independent woman, but moved to a country where it was very hard to be an independent woman, so made the decision to live as a man. So she dressed as a man, but she was incredibly sexual and was in love with another man.
Mm-hmm.
So just all these things. And so she's sort of, I felt like she was moving backwards and forwards in time simultaneously. And I feel like her story, she really, you know, came to life for me and I think lives within me and now lives within Abby, who does such an amazing job of bringing her spirit to life on stage.
Now, you mentioned that you not only have a director and a pit ensemble with mm-hmm. the Now Ensemble, but a filmmaker as well. What's the
yes.
role of film in this?
There's film really throughout the entire opera. Our filmmaker, Stephen Taylor, at the beginning of this project, you know, 5 years ago when I first had the idea, it was really just the two of us mm-hmm. who were working on it. So the visual component of the piece is very important and was sort of in my mind from the beginning.
All right. So it is a multimedia work, Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt. This next piece that you and Abby are going to do, Mektub, mm-hmm. it is written. Is this getting towards the end of things?
Yes. This is sort of the second to last part of the opera. At this point, you know, Isabel, there was just an assassination attempt made on her life. And she's,
why?
Well, you know, good question. We don't exactly know. We know that it was a member of a rival Sufi sect who tried to assassinate her. And I think my interpretation is just because she was a very public, visible figure, because she was a European woman, that it would have been a very public thing to kill her. But actually what happened was that, you know, he came to in a courtyard to attack her with a sword. And as he was coming down to cut off her head, the tip of the sword got caught in a clothesline and missed her head and just sort of cut her arm.
Wow.
So that's a moment that we show in the opera. But this next section that you're going to hear, Mektub, happens right after that. So she's in a monastery and she's convalescing getting over this wound. And while she's there, she receives a letter from her husband informing her that he has left her for another woman.
Mm. And again, worth mentioning, all of this actually happened mm-hmm. to young Isabel Eberhardt. Shall we hear it?
Sure.
This is called Mektub. It is written, and it is, again, part of the Missy Mazzoli opera Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt. Abigail Fisher in the role of Isabel, Missy Mazzoli at the piano, live on Soundcheck. Music from composer Missy Mazzoli from her opera Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt, a live performance of an excerpt called Mektub. It is written Abigail Fisher, the mezzo-soprano, the composer herself, Missy Mazzoli, at our piano. As we mentioned in the live performances, it's the Now Ensemble, based here in New York, who actually do the full-on sound. And if you're wondering what that sounds like, this is a little bit of the overture to the opera Song from the Uproar. In a moment, we'll continue our conversation with Missy Mazzoli, and composer and vocalist Meredith Monk will join us to share a new album of remixes. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. And some important information about our live broadcast Monday from the Green Space. We've had a change in our lineup. Yassine Bey won't be able to join us. If you're a ticket buyer and that affects your plans, look for an important message from the Green Space sent to the email address you used when you bought your tickets. But it's going to be a great show nonetheless on Monday. The Robert Glasper Experiment and R&B singer Bilal will still perform, and we'll be joined by Baba Brinkman, the rapper and playwright who recently set both Chaucer and Darwin to a hip-hop beat in acclaimed off-Broadway productions. Find out just how Baba Brinkman married Chaucer to hip-hop by tuning in or watching our live webcast Monday at 2 o'clock. Like how animals and plants all behave in the wild. So next time you shake hands or break dance or make plans, don't forget the straight facts. The information that makes your brains and hands comes from one place, DNA strands. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now with composer Missy Mazzoli, whose multimedia work Song from the Uproar, The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt, has its premiere at The Kitchen here in New York this weekend. In the background, you're hearing another project from Missy, her own ensemble, Victoire. And Missy, I mean, people who followed your career sort of associate you with this sound, you know, the more electroacoustic as opposed to you at the piano, which was also nice to hear. It strikes me, here you are, a composer writing about, you know, a woman on an adventure. Mm-hmm. And in a moment, Meredith Monk is going to join us. and she, of course, in her opera Atlas, also told a story about a woman on a great adventure. Now, of course, her adventurer lives, which is a big difference. But was Atlas, was Meredith Monk's Atlas an inspiration for you?
Definitely. Meredith's Monk, all of Meredith's work really has inspired me, maybe more than any other composer. She really set me free artistically. And Atlas in particular, I've known that piece since I was about 15. And I was struck by how she could create such an amazing emotional arc and carry us on this journey with very little text.
Right.
And without really a clear narrative. Mm-hmm. I mean, the emotional narrative to me is very clear, but what's actually happening is not always easy to figure out. And so I love that, and that made me feel like the possibilities for opera really opened up, and it made me feel like I could write this opera.
Mm-hmm. So it's more than just the double M's in your names, Missy Mazzoli.
You know, I don't know. There's maybe some significance to that, too.
So do you see Song from the Uproar as the first of a series?
Yes. I'm hoping, I'm planning, that this will be the first in a trilogy of operas, each one about a fascinating female character of the 20th and 21st century.
Well, Isabel just barely qualifies, right, since she was very much a late 19th century person, barely makes it into the 20th. Any ideas who the other two might be?
You know, I know who the second one's going to be about, but I can't tell you. And I have no idea who the third one's going to be about. So if any listeners have suggestions about fascinating women, I welcome them.
Leave them on the Soundcheck webpage at wnyc.org/soundcheck. The opera opens tomorrow at the Kitchen. As I mentioned, all the shows are sold out, but there is a wait list, and you can put your name on it, and people do get in to see things that way at the Kitchen. Missy, congratulations, and it's been a long time coming. Looking forward to hearing more. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Missy Mazzoli on Soundcheck. Still to come, the work of composer and vocalist Meredith Monk, the aforementioned Meredith Monk, getting the remix treatment from an all-star lineup on a new album. She'll tell us what it was like to hear her music reshaped by Björk, Caetano Veloso, and others. That's next. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Composer Meredith Monk has been exploring the voice as an instrument since the 60s. She's won just about every award we have for composers these days, including a MacArthur Fellowship, the so-called Genius Award. Now she's been named Musical America's Composer of the Year for 2012. Plus, other musicians really like her. In fact, they've been lining up to take part in a new project that offers remixes and reinterpretations of some of Meredith Monk's works. In the background, you're hearing Björk with the Brodsky String Quartet doing a version of Monk's early piece Gotham Lullaby. And there's plenty more where that came from. Meredith Monk is here to share some of the album called Monk Mix. Welcome back, Meredith.
Thank you, John.
So Björk was actually an appropriate person to start with because this really was the beginnings of the project, wasn't it?
Well, I heard her version of Gotham Lullaby. Nobody had ever covered a piece of mine before. And I heard it by chance because I was teaching at Connecticut College. Mm-hmm. And one of my students said, Björk is covering Gotham Lullaby. It's on an MP3. So I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So then I heard it and I realized that she had really found her own way. You know, it usually doesn't work when people try to sing a piece just like I do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get into
Well, for a couple of reasons.
Well, you have to really get into the world of that piece.
Right.
And I felt that she had found her own way, but she really kept the feeling of Gotham Lullaby.
So without trying to imitate all of the so-called extended vocal techniques that you've developed over the years, it's clearly Björk.
That's right.
But it's also clearly Gotham Lullaby. Now, she also did this at a Zankel Hall event.
Yes.
And it was, one of these things where a lot of people came together to celebrate you and your music. And one of the people there was DJ Spooky.
Yes.
And he's the one who sort of masterminded this thing, didn't he?
Yeah, he's, I think it was just around that time. Maybe he got the idea from that marathon. But he said, I've got all my friends that would love to remix your music. And I was a little bit skeptical. So I was like, I don't know. And then I was a little like, I don't know. And then I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, okay. So it went on for a while.
How much back and forth did he have to do to get you to agree to this?
It took a while.
Really?
I mean, we've been talking about this since 2005, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes, that is a while.
Yeah.
Let me give you an idea of what DJ Spooky and the rest of the gang have done on this record called Monk Mix. First, these are just a couple of short excerpts from Meredith Monk's Book of Days.
Oh.
So there are just a couple of short excerpts from Meredith Monk's original recording of Book of Days. Now here's what DJ Spooky came up with on the record called Monk Mix. That is DJ Spooky's remix of Dawn, an excerpt from Meredith Monk's Book of Days. And so, Meredith, you referred once to the recording of Book of Days as a film for the ears. Mm-hmm. How did it feel to hear that film for the ears turned into a pop song?
Now it's a film for the body, because you just dance, start dancing.
And in the interest of full disclosure, Meredith was indeed kind of dancing
bopping
a little
around
bit
there
here in the studio during. So, I mean, he's taken the same clips that we just played, mm-hmm. but it's not just setting them to a beat. I mean, he's sort of...
He actually changed the accents are different, and then he has a different kind of harmonies underneath it,
mm-hmm.
plus the beat.
Now, this is a sort of interesting extension of a kind of performance practice that has grown up around your music over the course of your career. I mean, at the beginning, you wrote for your voice.
Right.
Then there was the Meredith Monk Vocal Ensemble,
exactly.
Handpicked group.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, you know, you started writing for other people. I think it was Musica Sacra recorded some of your work.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have Björk
other
singing.
People
yeah.
making something.
So, I mean, did you sort of at some point try to push that development along, or did that take you by surprise?
I think it's been a big surprise, and actually I always come back to working with my own ensemble. That's my home. That's my home base. You know, it's if I reach out a little bit, it's a little bit like trying to extend out to and try to be generous with the music, because I think the music is very joyful to perform. Then I always feel like I need to go right back home again to my ensemble and actually even to sometimes I work on solo pieces
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the vocal, you know, we talk about the voice as instrument, and just as in the 20th century, violinists and cellists and guitarists were all working and extending the boundaries mm-hmm. of their instruments. You've done that with the voice as well. But now you're also writing instrumental pieces.
Yeah.
And including a new work for the San Francisco Symphony.
Yeah,
what's that?
Well, it's called Realm Variations, and Michael Tilson Thomas is reviving the American Maverick series here in New York, but also in San Francisco. So he called me up and he said, you know, I'd really like you to, we have this wonderful piccolo player in the orchestra, and I'd really like you to make a piece for her, Catherine Payne. And I said, Michael, I don't even know anything about the piccolo. And I have to admit, it's not my favorite instrument. So wait a minute here. And so then I decided, well, she really wanted, I think it might have come from Kathy that she really wanted to work on this music. So I started thinking about a very treble realm of sound. So I have up there a violin as well, playing mm-hmm. very high. The two of them are playing a lot of duets. And then two sopranos, Allison Sniffen and Randall Wong. From my ensemble. Mm-hmm. Then in the mid-range.
And yes, that second name, folks, was a male name.
Yes,
Randall
he's
is a male soprano.
He's an amazing soprano.
Yeah.
And then the mid-range, I have French horn and viola, and then Katie Geisinger and I am singing.
Okay.
And then on the bottom range, I've got bassoon and contrabass clarinet, and then two basses singing. And then harp pulls those realms together. You know, it really becomes a, you know, the fabric of the piece, although I use the harp very low, which I think is so beautiful, the low range, which a lot of people don't work
so,
with.
So even here, writing for the San Francisco Symphony, the members of your ensemble, mm-hmm. your home base, as mm-hmm. you put it, are kind of a crucial part of the sound.
Definitely.
So that that piece, Realm Variations, that gets its world premiere in San Francisco, Michael Tilson Thomas conducting on March 18th, and then New York premiere here in New York at Carnegie's Zankel Hall on March 30th. And again, the idea of a performance practice developing around your music over the years, it's gotten to the point now where on this new record, Caetano Veloso does a version of one of your songs. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of his?
Oh, I have been a fan of his since his first album that I ever heard, which was a Nonesuch recording in 1986. I think it was just called Caetano Veloso. It's a beautiful album with just him singing. And Bob Hurwitz from Nonesuch said, you have to hear this singer. And, you know, it's very different than the way that I sing. You know, it's much more a pop, you know, mm-hmm. Brazilian pop singer. But I don't know what it is about his singing. I just fell madly in love with his voice and the way that he sings and that kind of relaxed way that he sings.
Yeah.
So I've been a complete fan. So, I was, you know, just almost pinching myself that he would consider singing one of my pieces. But then he told me that he's been a fan of mine over the years and that my music has helped him keep going, you know, and you know, and so just being in contact with him has been a miracle.
Are you a fan of Brazilian music in general?
Definitely. Yeah. Especially Caetano, but definitely Brazilian music. I love it.
Well, this is the great Brazilian singer and songwriter Caetano Veloso doing Meredith Monk's last song. Let's dance, let's dance. That is Caetano Veloso. That's another side of Caetano Veloso.
Yeah.
Doing Meredith Monk's last song from the 2-CD set called Monk Mix, which features interpretations and remixes from Lee Rinaldo of Sonic Youth, the Bang on a Can All-Stars, Miho Hattori, Scanner, High Priest from Antipop Consortium, Gabriel Prokofiev, Sergei's grandson, lots of other people. Did you have any, did you make any calls to any of these folks?
Paul was the person that really started. Paul Miller, DJ Spooky, did the first calls, I think. And I think we were thinking originally it was going to be straight remixes. But little by little, it just seemed like that it was nice to open it up for people that either were covering the songs. And then there's a third category of people that have, it's not exactly a remix, but they take some of the recorded things, but they really recompose it, you could say, like Gabriel Prokofiev.
Right.
He really takes Boatman and then he alters it. So I wouldn't say exactly a remix, do you know what I mean? It's like almost a different composition.
Almost like a collage.
Like a collage. Yeah. So people really did different approaches.
Right. Uh-huh. But Caetano, that's a cover.
Caetano is a straight cover.
Right.
And so at a certain point, I think 2 years ago, I mean, this has really been going on. I took a look at this list because I didn't really do so much on this at all. Peter Ciccioli really was the producer of the album. And DJ Spooky was the executive producer, I guess you would say, the catalyst. And so I was looking at the list and I realized, I'm not sure that I know almost anybody on this list.
Well, that I was going to ask you whether you knew these folks.
So it just seemed nice to ask people that I had a connection to. So that's when Caetano was on. And I think we had always thought Björk's cut was going to be on because I always loved that cut of hers. And then I love the Lucas Ligeti is a beautiful cut. And Suzanne Dehim is a very beautiful
Iranian singer for many years based here in New York. If the tables were turned, whose music would you like to cover?
Oh, that's a hard question because I don't really sing other people's music that much.
I know.
I find it really challenging. Like one person that I loved singing his music, but it was very difficult. It was the late Donald Ashwander. So I did sing some of his songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very challenging.
For folks who don't, most folks don't know Donald Ashwander. He was one of those kind of neo-ragtime pianists. Here in New York,
yes,
passed away some 20 or
30 years ago, I guess.
1994.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what about John Cage? Because you mentioned this American Maverick series that Michael Tilson Thomas and the San Francisco Symphony are doing, and you are taking part in the John Cage songbooks.
Well, see, this telephone call from Michael Tilson Thomas was like, oh, my gosh. You know, first it was like, would you write a piece for Piccolo? So I'm like, ay, ay, ay. And then the second was, will you sing John Cage songbooks with Jesse Norman? And at that time, Joan LaBarbera wasn't, he didn't mention her, but then later they mm-hmm. Hired her. And she's also a real expert, had his music. She's sung his music for years.
Right.
So,
but Jesse Norman is better known as an opera singer.
That's right. I think we're both a little out of our comfort zone. I haven't met Jesse yet, but I would imagine.
Wow.
Maybe she isn't, though, but I am.
So you've never done anything like this before?
Well, I did do his piece called Aria in 1986. Upstate, and John came to my little house, and I made him dinner, and you know, I did two performances of that. So, you know, I did have that experience. But it's very challenging because each of the pieces, in a way, you have to make your own piece. It's very intricate and very rigorous. You know, I think a lot of people think of John as you can do anything you want. Not at all. He has his directions are very, very specific. You have to really construct your interpretation. And each one takes a lot of time. So I'm singing five pieces, and one of them is just really literally just reading a piece that he wrote, but the rhythms are very, very, very hard.
So it's a series of, it's not like there are trios with you and Jesse singing together with Joan LaBarbera.
Well, I think what they're going to do, at least is what Michael told me, and there's a director, Yuval Sharon, who's a young opera director in L.A., I think they're going to do like a collage where sometimes we could be singing three different pieces simultaneously.
Oh.
So basically, and it's a very John kind of way of thinking about things, each of us is having a track of songs, like of the five songs, but we're singing different songs at different times. Mm. And then sometimes you have to be still. You know, there are these actions in between. And so I think it's will always be a sort of chance operation thing, except that we have to stay on our own tracks and not be influenced or relate to the other singers.
Wow. Which is sort of goes against a lot of what singers are trained to do. So, well, if you're interested to hear how that all turns out, the performance of the John Cage songbooks with my guest, Meredith Monk, and the famed opera singer, Jesse Norman, and one of John Cage's longest interpreter, one of his longstanding interpreters, Joan LaBarbera, takes place at Carnegie on March 27th as part of the American Mavericks Festival. Meredith Monk's with me on Soundcheck today, and we're talking about, among other things, Monk Mix, this album of remixes and covers. And did you have any kind of qualms about when people came to pieces like Dolman Music, you know, this classic work that you wrote in the mid-70s and started doing the slicing and dicing with, you know, what is considered to be a classic piece of yours?
Yeah. I mean, this CD, it's really exciting to see what other people will do and kind of be open to that. I mean, I feel like, again, in the spirit of generosity, what will people do that might surprise me? You know, that's exciting. But, you know, it's also difficult because the forms are a certain way because they need to be. There's an urgency about making this form that has a real integrity, like emotionally and musically. So that becomes a little difficult for me. It's challenging when it does get broken up.
So when Shodake, who's from Baltimore, mm-hmm. when he did his remix of mm-hmm. Dolman Music, mm-hmm. were you taken aback a little bit initially?
I think that it doesn't have that much to do with Dolman Music in a way. You know, and I think that some people went pretty far away from the music. So, you know, you get these shadows of Dolman Music. You get these little sections or little, you know, what would I say? Little shards. You get little shards of Dolman Music,
yeah.
Little echoes. But basically, he really has gone in a different direction.
Well, let's hear again just a little bit of the source material that Shodake used from Meredith's Dolman Music.
Oh!
All right, just a couple of little clips from Meredith Monk's mid-70s piece, Dolman Music. And now, here is Shotika's Dolman Music 1 remix. Dolman Music 1 remix by the beatboxer known as Shotika, based on Meredith Monk's Dolman Music. And Meredith, he's a beatboxer. Mm-hmm. Is he kind of a kindred spirit? I mean, he's using the voice as an instrument.
Oh, I think he's really remarkable. Beatboxer, my goodness. I heard him on the radio. Someone sent me a CD because they said that he really liked my music a lot and was inspired. But when I heard what he did, I was like, how did you do that? I mean, how could I be an inspiration? I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, he's really amazing.
Well, I think, you know, the reason people like Shotika and, you know, a group of younger rock singers, Melody from Tune Yards and the group Chairlift, I think the reason they all say Meredith Monk, big inspiration, and Missy Mazzoli earlier today, is that, you know, your use of the voice, not tethered to text, was really kind of important, I mm-hmm. think, for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. How different did that feel when you started down that road? Did you know that you were sort of blazing a new trail?
You know, I think I was pretty lonely in that pursuit. You know, for me personally, I came from a family of singers, and I really wanted to find my own way. And I think that I always trusted nonverbal communication because I also came from a movement background. And so when I had the revelation about that my voice could be like an instrument, it really was a revelation. It was one of those aha moments that you sometimes have in life. I knew I had found it. I mean, I knew I'd found what I was looking for. And then I felt like I was coming back to my family blood, like I was born to do it or something. I know it sounds crazy, but nobody was really working that way at that time. And I realized that language would also get in the way. I felt that the voice itself was such a powerful, emotional, and ancient kind of language. So I just started exploring, you know, that, and that was my path.
And your mom, whose job was to sing all words,
yes,
all the time,
right.
And she sang commercials.
Yeah,
she sang the
DUZ Does Everything, Schaefer Beer, Blue Bonnet Margarine, Royal Pudding.
So singing those things live on the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did she think when you were like, you know, I'm not going to do Does or Schaefer or any of that stuff?
Well, I think at the beginning, maybe she might have been a little wondering what was going on. But there, at a certain point, I actually used her and two of her studio cronies in a piece of mine called Juice at the Guggenheim Museum. And she said, I don't know how you pick those notes out of the air. You know, but they were really game and they were good sports. And so I think that was a way of getting her into it. And then I think she was very, you know, she really loved the music as the years went on.
My guest is Meredith Monk. The album's called Monk Mix, an album of remixes, reinterpretations. So are you convinced? Are you going to do a dance record of your own now?
What do you mean, John?
Well, you got all these dance mixes here that you're clearly enjoying as we're playing them in the studio. But actually, you know, just because it's a remix doesn't mean it's a dance piece. If we listen to something like Ryuichi Sakamoto, very ethereal.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
beautiful.
Really captured the sort of the essence.
I love what he did.
This is Ryuichi Sakamoto's remix of Meredith Monk's Astronaut Anthem. Meredith Monk's piece for the San Francisco Symphony, The Realm Variations, gets its New York premiere at Zankel Hall on March 30th. Meredith, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, John.
This is Soundcheck. Ryuichi Sakamoto's remix of Meredith Monk's Astronaut Anthem, wrapping up Soundcheck for today. Tomorrow, a look back at the life and career of the late blues guitarist Hubert Sumlin, who was Howlin' Wolf's right-hand man for 20 years. And clarinetist Don Byron brings his gospel-inspired new project to our studio for a live performance. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Gina Gildasis. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.